Chapter 13, Economic Development in Nebraska, by Michael Wasilenko. Introduction. Fewerster business representatives, policymakers, and students of economic development more than business climate. Most of these people have given this matter at least some thought, and have firm opinions on the subject. The debate among these actors in the policy process is often lively and stimulating. But so often what is called for is an objective assessment of the business climate in a state, and some very specific recommendations about how to improve the business climate. This chapter supplies an analysis of the business climate in Nebraska. Employment growth has slowed down in Nebraska between 1980 and 1985, and it has slowed both relative to the rate of employment growth in the United States during that same period and relative to the employment growth in Nebraska during the 1970 to 1980 period. Moreover, the employment growth slowdown is not entirely attributable to the downturn in the agricultural sector of the state economy. But according to the results in this study, the employment growth slowdown can also not be assigned to the business climate in Nebraska. Of course, in most states the business climate can always be improved. The major problems with Nebraska's business climate are the very high property tax burdens that local governments in Nebraska impose and levying the sales tax on investment purchases of machinery and equipment. In the other major areas, such as the level of the wage rate and the level of education of the labor force, Nebraska has a comparative advantage both relative to the nation as a whole and among the 8 neighboring states. Moreover, Nebraska's tax rates for the major taxes, with the exception of the property tax, are moderate to low relative to the United States average and to its neighboring states. Per capita state and local expenditure levels are also in line with those for the nation as a whole and with those in neighboring states. 3 recommendations are made here for Nebraska. First, the sales and use tax should not apply to investment purchases of machinery and equipment. This reform goes beyond the refund of sales and use taxes on machinery and equipment for large investors, as provided in Legislative Bill 775. Second, other findings suggest that Nebraska's employment growth might be increased if it increased its subsidy to train unemployed workers and targeted the subsidy to firms to pay for part of the costs of training its new workers. Third, fiscal reform much beyond local government expenditure reduction is required to bring the property tax in line with that in other states. This chapter is organized into 6 more sections. After a section that gives some background on the Nebraska economy, the following section reviews employment trends by industry between 1970 and 1980 and between 1980 and 1985 for Nebraska, 8 neighboring states, and for the United States as a whole. A third section reviews the existing literature on business location decisions and the important factors that determine economic development. The fourth section discusses the business climate in Nebraska and is followed by a section that contains an analysis of the empirical determinants of employment growth among states during the 1980 to 1985 period. A concluding section contains recommendations for improving the Nebraska business climate. Background. The economic activity in the agricultural sector in Nebraska, like that in other plains states, has declined since 1982. As a result, agricultural land values reached $730 per acre in 1982 and have declined steadily since then to $364 per acre in 1986. Nebraska has a greater proportion of its counties dependent on agriculture than other states, but the decline in agricultural land values occurred in all of the Midwestern states. Only in one state, Iowa, have land prices declined more than in Nebraska. In fact, the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Affairs, ACIR, judges that the agricultural recession has put fiscal stress on the state and local governments in both Iowa and Nebraska. More specifically, each state will have trouble balancing their budgets given their existing expenditure obligations, tax bases, and tax rates. A variety of causes contribute to the agricultural recession. the once overvalued U.S. dollar, and the reduction of agricultural exports that ensues was often cited as a major cause of the decline in the agricultural sector. But developing countries have also experienced the Green Revolution, and they have become less dependent on U.S. agricultural exports. As a result, one cannot be too optimistic about strong economic recovery in the agricultural sector. There are reasons to be even less optimistic about the agricultural sector's recovery in Nebraska than in the U.S. as a whole. Due to the dry summers in Nebraska, compared to Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana, farmers must irrigate their corn crop. With the proposed removal of the federal government subsidies to agriculture, Nebraska's comparative disadvantage in corn production compared to Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana will become apparent. The lack of agricultural subsidies will mean that for many Nebraska farmers their production costs without the subsidy will become higher than the market price of corn. Farmers in Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana will have lower production cost, as they do not have irrigation costs. This implies that agriculture in Nebraska will probably not return to its former economic heights. On a more positive note, federal ranching subsidies are also being scrutinized, and the removal of these subsidies may mean that Nebraska's inherent comparative advantage in this area relative to Montana, Utah, and Wyoming will cause Nebraska's share of the ranching and feedlot industry to increase. Should these subsidies disappear and more feedlots appear in Nebraska, it will become an even more attractive location for meat processing. The caveat that must be mentioned before becoming too optimistic is that the per capita consumption of red meat is at its lowest point ever, and it is not clear that it has bottomed out. Stemming the reduction in red meat consumption will require leaner meat, and also meat that has less antibiotic residuals. Fewer antibiotics means fattening cattle more efficiently and more quickly so that fewer antibiotics are required to keep the cattle healthy. It would therefore appear that biotech research in raising livestock for leaner meat would be an interesting research area to develop both at the state university and in the private sector. This topic will be addressed further below when the issue of business and government partnership is discussed. Employment structure and growth, Nebraska and neighboring states. The present structure of employment in Nebraska gives some indication of its existing comparative advantage. However, high employment growth rates in industries with low concentrations of employees could indicate that the comparative advantage may be shifting to these industries. More specifically, if employment in Nebraska's traditional industries grows more rapidly than in other industries, there would not be any shift in comparative advantage. But rapid employment growth in a few sectors other than the traditional industries may mean that comparative advantage has shifted to these new industries. In what follows, I report the employment structure for Nebraska in 1985 and employment growth rates for Nebraska and its neighbors, Colorado, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and the United States as a whole from 1970 to 1980, and for the more recent period from 1980 to 1985. Both the Bureau of Economic Analysis, BEA, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, publish data on employment. The former source includes the agricultural sector in their employment figures, while the latter does not. Given the importance of agriculture in Nebraska, it seems appropriate to use the BEA employment figures. From the data in Table 13.1, farm and agricultural services represent 10% of 1985 total employment in Nebraska. Manufacturing employment also represents about 10% of total employment, and durable and non-durable manufacturing have about equal shares of the manufacturing employment. Within manufacturing, food and kindred produces account for 28% of Nebraska's manufacturing employment, and machinery, except electrical and electric and electronic equipment, account for another 23% of the state's manufacturing employment. Retail trade and services have 16.5% and 22.5% of total employment, respectively, except for manufacturing. And the farm sector, Nebraska's distribution of employment among industries looks very much like that of the United States. In the U.S., farm and agricultural services have only 4% of the total employment, while manufacturing has about 18% of total U.S. employment. The government sector represents a lower share of Nebraska's employment, 16.7%, than in the U.S., where government's employment share is 18% of total employment. In Table 13 to the employment growth patterns in Nebraska compared to its neighboring states and the U.S. are reported. During the 1970 to 1980 period, Nebraska's 2.1% annual growth rate for total employment kept pace with the 2.3% annual growth rate in the U.S. as a whole. Except for Iowa, Missouri, and South Dakota, where employment grew more slowly than in Nebraska, employment between 1970 and 1980 grew more rapidly in Wyoming. 5.7%, Colorado, 4.1%. Minnesota, 2.9%, Kansas, 2.6%, and North Dakota, 2.3%, than in Nebraska. Thus, with the exception of three states, employment grew more rapidly in this region than in the U.S. Generally, employment growth during the 1970 to 1980 period occurred in most of the industries in these nine states. While employment on farms decreased during the 1970 to 1980 period, in all of these states except Minnesota and Nebraska, several states, Colorado and Minnesota, show higher than U.S. average employment growth in agricultural services. Except for Missouri, manufacturing employment grew more rapidly in Nebraska and in its seven other neighboring states than in the U.S. Moreover, with the exception of mining in Iowa and Missouri, employment in all other industries in these states increased, although not faster than the increase for the industry in the U.S., in all cases. However, for this period, one must conclude that most of these states, including Nebraska, experienced increases in employment, and five of the nine states in the region realized better employment growth than the U.S. average. During the 1980 to 1985 period, total employment grew much more slowly both in the U.S. and for all of these nine states compared to the 1970 to 1980 period, see Table 13-2. Annual U.S. employment grew at 1.9% in the 1980 to 1985 period, compared to 2.3% in the 1970 to 1980 period. Moreover, during the 1980 to 1985 period, with the exception of Colorado, all of the other eight states in the region had annual employment growth rates lower than the overall growth rate in the U.S. In Iowa, total employment declined at an annual rate of 0.2. Nebraska experienced a 0.9% annual increase in employment, and five of its eight neighboring states, Colorado, 3.3%, Kansas, 1.2%, Minnesota, 1.4%, Missouri, 1.7%, and South Dakota, 1.0%, had higher employment growth rates. The slower employment growth in Nebraska and the three other states during the 1980 to 1985 period is largely attributable to employment decreases in one or more of the following industries: mining, construction, manufacturing, transportation industries, and wholesale trade. Nebraska lost employment in the manufacturing, transportation, and wholesale trade industries during the 1980 to 1985 period, and Nebraska's employment in retail trade, finance, services, and government has grown more slowly than national employment in these industries. While Nebraska has experienced low employment growth, Nebraska has not fared too badly compared to some of its neighbors, and especially Iowa. Moreover, the decline in manufacturing employment at the national level suggests that as a whole, manufacturing may not lead the resurgence of Nebraska's economy. But about 52% of Nebraska's manufacturing employment is concentrated in three two-digit, SIC, industries, food and kindred products. 29% machinery, except electrical, 13%, and electric and electronic equipment, 10%. For example, food and kindred products may grow nationally and in Nebraska. The message here is that these three traditionally dominant sectors within manufacturing in Nebraska probably still represent strong potential for employment growth. Review of empirical evidence on interregional business location decisions. Survey evidence. A survey of firms is one way to analyze firm locational decisions. The three most influential studies are those of Mueller and Morgan for Michigan manufacturing firms, Greenhut and Kohlberg for Florida manufacturing firms, and Schmenner for Fortune 500 firms. The discussion here is confined to the results obtained for the Fortune 500 plants because the results from this survey are both more recent and the responses are less regionally specific than the other surveys. Schmenner examined Dun & Bradstreet data on Fortune 500 plants in 1972 and 1978 to determine plant expansions, contractions, branching, relocations, and deaths. He takes a sample of these plants and conducts a questionnaire survey on the characteristics of the plant and its location decisions. One interesting result is that 9,499 plants in the Fortune 500 survey did not move or open new plants. Moreover, 18%, 1,705 plants of these stay-put plants expanded their plants on site during the 1970s, while another 1,611 plants opened new branches during this period. By contrast, only 450 plants relocated. This reconfirms Birch's point that most firms do not relocate, and that expansion on-site and, to a lesser extent, branching are the most frequent methods of altering production capacity. In addition, Schmenner finds that 47% of establishments that have opened a new branch plant, rather than expand on-site, cite no space to expand at their existing plant as a reason for not expanding on-site. From this particular response, plants seem to have a strong preference to stay in place. In the same data, 33% of the branching firms mention hedging against labor strife or natural disaster as a reason for opening a branch location. 26% of the plants cite a desire to escape unproductive labor, and 25% mention too many workers at the existing plant. By contrast, only 1% of the plants name escaping high taxes and bad business climate among the reasons for opening a branch plant. The fact that relatively few firms relocate suggests incentive policies designed to attract relocating businesses may not produce significant employment gains. Schmenner's study, among others, documents that changes in employment occur largely through existing employers expanding or shrinking at their present site. Therefore, it is particularly important to avoid business tax incentives designed to attract new firms, but that are not available to businesses that already exist in the state. Put another way, existing businesses are the golden geese, and tax incentive programs that discriminate against existing business violate the golden geese adage. Econometric evidence. Most of the econometric evidence on firm movement and employment growth is based on cross-sectional analysis. In this literature, regional differences in the number of firms and employment, and the growth rate of firms and employment are generally related to regional differences in market and cost variables hypothesized to affect firm location. This literature is also heavily oriented toward manufacturing firm location choices, but some studies consider non-manufacturing industries. The results for the fiscal variables used in these analyses and the data that are analyzed in these studies are reported in Table 13.3. Carlton, in two separate analyses, examines the importance of taxes and fiscal incentives, among other variables, in explaining variations among SMSAs in the birth of single establishment firms and in the number of branch plants in three manufacturing industries: fabricated plastics, SIC 3079, communication transmitting equipment, SIC 3662, and electronic components, SIC 3679. He uses Dun and Bradstreet data to construct the dependent variables. Carlton uses a comprehensive list of SMSA variables to explain the dependent variables. The variables include wages, supply of skilled labor, corporate and personal income taxes, property taxes, energy cost, electricity and natural gas, proximity to markets and raw materials, unemployment rates, number of recent work stoppages, construction costs, land costs, and a business climate index. The Business Climate Index is composed of business tax exemptions and other fiscal incentives, as well as state right-to-work laws, state minimum wage laws, state fair employment practice codes, and the presence of statewide industrial noise abatement codes. Carlton analyzes single-establishment births in SMSAs between 1967 and 1975, as well as between 1967 and 1971, and between 1971 and 1975 separately. The results from the econometric models are structurally stable over the two periods. Wages and electricity prices have relatively large and statistically significant effects on single-establishment births, although the electricity coefficient is much smaller in magnitude 463662 than for the other two industries. The coefficients of agglomeration economies and the number of engineers variables are also important and statistically significant in explaining births of single establishments. On the tax side, his results do not support the view that taxes are a major business location determinant, but, on the other hand, taxes cannot be ruled out as having some influence. Carlton examines branch plant births only during the 1967 to 1971 period, because data on branching for the 1971 to 1975 period are not available. The wage effect could not be estimated with much precision. It is statistically insignificant in the regression 463662 and 3679, but given the wide confidence interval on this coefficient, a large wage effect could not be ruled out. Energy prices have a strong negative effect on the birth of branch plants in all three industries. The existing amount of industry activity in a particular industry also has a large influence on the number of births and the availability of technical expertise in the labor force is an important factor in spurring branch births in technologically more sophisticated industries. In a subsequent article, Carlton shows that the decisions about where to establish a branch plant and the size, number of employees of the branch plant are linked through the profit function by duality theory. He then simultaneously models the probability of establishing a branch plant in any particular location and the size of the branch plant. He analyzes the same Dun and Bradstreet data for branch plants as in his 1979 study. The use of the same industries and the same time period obviously facilitates comparisons of the findings in the two studies. The model generally predicts the size of branch plants very well. The wage effect could not be measured very precisely, and its coefficient is statistically insignificant for each of these three industries. Higher energy costs have a large negative effect on the size of branch plants in these industries, and an existing concentration of the industry has a large positive effect on the size of the branch plant in a region. Available expertise is important for the highly sophisticated industry 63662, but taxes and business climate do not appear to have a major effect on branch births for any of the three industries. Plout and Pluta examine aggregate manufacturing growth for 48 states between 1967-72 and 1972-77. They use the percentage change in employment, in real value added, and in the real capital stock as dependent variables. They include a large number of variables representing market accessibility, labor's wages and unionization, energy, land, climate, and business climate as explanatory variables. For employment change, they find that an adverse business climate rank and high overall tax effort in a state tend to slow employment growth. The coefficients of these two variables are negative and statistically significant. But corporate taxes, personal income taxes, and the sales tax are not important. Surprisingly, higher property taxes are associated with more employment growth. On the expenditure side, they find that higher education expenditures lead to more employment growth. In addition, contrary to what some casual observers have contended, welfare expenditures do not have a statistically significant effect on employment growth. Newman examines employment growth in 13 two-digit SIC manufacturing industries for 48 states between 1957 and 1965, and between 1965 and 1973, The three explanatory variables are the change in the corporate tax rate, the change in unionization, and a dummy variable representing whether a state has a right to work law. He finds evidence that all three of these variables affect aggregate manufacturing employment growth rates in states. Higher state corporate tax rates are especially important for explaining lower state employment growth in capital-intensive manufacturing industries, while the right-to-work law variable enhances employment growth in 11 of the 13 industries studied. Bartik examines new branch plant locations for all Fortune 500 firms in the 48 states between 1972 and 1978 using Schmenares data on the number of new branch plants from his Fortune 500 study. He uses variables that reflect labor costs, energy prices, taxes, and agglomeration economies. Using conditional logit analysis, Bartik finds that the effective corporate income tax rate has a negative effect on the probability of locating a branch plant in a state, and that unionization also has a negative effect on the probability of branch plant location. In addition, the wage rate and energy prices are not statistically significant determinants of branch plant location. But the size of the coefficients of these two variables suggests that they may have relatively large effects on branch plant location, even though the data do not permit a very precise measure of their effect. Bartik also finds that agglomeration of manufacturing firms, as measured by manufacturing employment per acre, attracts branch plants, as does the number of highway miles in a state. Benson and Johnson analyze a pooled cross-section and time series of per capita annual expenditure on manufacturing plant and equipment, MFGPE, in 48 states during the 1966 to 1978 period. They regress the ratio of MFGPE to the average MFGPE in all 48 states against variables such as the wage rate in the state compared to the average in all other states, relative wage rate. Other independent variables include relative per capita welfare expenditure, relative ratio of state and local debt to personal income, and the relative ratio of total state and local taxes to personal income. The lagged values of the tax variable for each of the six previous years are also included in the regression equation. They find that the tax variables are important determinants of MFGPE in a state. More specifically, the lag tax variables have statistically significant negative coefficients, and thus higher taxes adversely affect plant and equipment investment. Wasi, Linko, and McGuire analyzed total employment growth in 48 states between 1973 and 1980 and employment growth for six major industries: manufacturing, transportation, wholesale trade, retail trade, finance, insurance, and real estate, and services. The percentage change in employment in each of these industrial categories is regressed against variables measuring the state's wage rate, energy prices, temperature extremes, fiscal climate, and, for industries largely producing for final demand in the state, market variables. This last group of variables includes per capita income and population density. The fiscal variables include measures of personal and corporate income tax burdens and the overall increase in the tax effort in the state. In addition, state and local primary and secondary education expenditures as a percentage of personal income and state and local welfare expenditures as a percentage of income are used to test the effects of public services on firm location. For total employment, wages, energy prices, and per capita income have important effects on employment growth. Wages are also important for employment growth in retail trade, finance, and services. Per capita income is also an important determinant in these same three industries, while energy prices have important effects in all six industries, and the total employment regression. Among fiscal variables, the corporate income tax does not appear to have statistically significant negative effects on employment growth. However, total employment growth is slower in states where overall tax effort is growing relative to that in other states. Moreover, the personal income tax rate has relatively important negative effects on employment growth for three industries: wholesale trade, retail trade, and finance. On the other hand, education expenditures as a percentage of income has important positive effects on employment growth for retail trade and finance, and for total employment growth. The effect of fiscal variables on a state's employment growth relative to other states depends on the size of the coefficient for these variables and the extent to which the fiscal variable deviates from the average in other states. For example, personal income tax will have a larger adverse effect on employment growth in a state where the personal income tax rate is much higher than the average tax rates for all states, even though the estimated coefficient on tax rate variable may be small. Similarly, it does not follow that a fiscal variable that has a large coefficient will have significant influence on a particular state's sluggish employment growth, because the fiscal variable in that state may not be out of line vis-a-vis other states. Stutzer specifically addresses the importance of small issue industrial revenue bonds, SIRB, for engendering employment growth in states. He tests their potential effects using two alternative models. A variable defined as the average value of SIRB in each state for the years 1977 to 1979 as a proportion of total state employment is added to the list of variables in the empirical model already reported in Wasilenko and McGill. The results are that SIRB do not have statistically significant coefficients in any of the six industries or in the total employment regressions. As an alternative test, Stutzer runs a time series causality test for Minnesota employment, property tax base, and personal income. He forecasts each of these three variables using lags on the three variables and the issuance of SIRB. None of the results show that SIRB have a statistically significant effect on the three dependent variables. Using a pooled cross-section time series dataset, Haynes examines the growth of states' real personal income in 48 states during the 1965 to 1979 period. He explained the growth of states' personal income using three types of variables: 1, taxes and other revenues; 2, public expenditures; and 3, demographic and labor force characteristics. Haynes finds that all three types of variables are statistically significant in explaining state income growth. Of particular interest here is that he finds that taxes have a negative effect on income growth, while expenditures, and particularly educational expenditures, have a positive effect on economic growth. In addition, the $1 increase in education spending financed by raising property tax $1 has a net positive effect on states' income growth during this time period. The last study considered here by Schminner, Huber, and Cook examines the effects of a variety of factors on the location Fortune 500 plants opened in the L970s. Schminner et al. Examine the location decision in two stages. 1. Firms narrow the choice to a few states that are then given further consideration, and 2. Firms then chose the final location from the few states identified in stage 1. In their study, Schminner et al. Allow the effects of the labor force, demographic, and fiscal variables to be moderated by the characteristics of the plant. These characteristics include the sentiment for low taxes, the type of product produced at the plant, size of the market area, and others. For the first stage decision, a wide variety of fiscal variables are statistically significant when the moderating characteristics of the plant are taken into account. But the same set of variables, including the fiscal variables, do not explain the choice of the location from among the limited number of serious state candidates in the second stage of the decision. In this latter stage, fiscal variables appear to have only a weak influence. Implications of these findings. The findings for the fiscal variables from these studies are perplexing and do not leave us with a clear direction. At the same time, one cannot reject that fiscal variables may influence firm location. The studies are usefully divided along two lines: 1, those that use micro or individual firm data, and 2, those that examine aggregate trends in employment or income growth. A few recent studies using micro or firm-level data generally do not find that taxes or business climate are determinants of business location decisions. These studies include both survey research, where, in the course of an interview, personnel at individual firms rank the important location factors and Carlton's econometric studies that analyze microdata on individual firms. However, Bartik also analyzes microdata on a group of Fortune 500 branch plants and finds that corporate taxes have a negative and statistically significant effect on branch locations among states. Schmenner et al. Also find using microdata that fiscal variables influence the first stage of the plant location decision, where all but a few states are eliminated from consideration. But fiscal variables make a much weaker showing in the decision of narrowing the few final states down to a single location. This finding tends to contradict the often heard explanation that fiscal variables may become especially important in the choice between two alternative states. On the other hand, many of the studies that use state or regional aggregate data find business taxes, or, more frequently, personal income taxes and education expenditures, to be important determinants of business location decisions. These latter fiscal variables thus appear to have an indirect effect on business location through their effect on the availability of a productive labor force. Another problem is that these studies do not, and probably cannot, given limited number of observations, consider all of the complexities of the state and local tax system. Instead, the aggregate tax rate variable is often used in the regression, and it may not reveal the true extent of the poor business climate. Another weakness of this literature is that few studies examine the effect of incentive programs. In the few studies that do examine the employment effect of incentive programs, Carlton, Stutzer, they are found to have no influence on firm location. Nonetheless, given this evidence, it is increasingly difficult to argue that business climate, broadly defined, does not influence in a regional firm locations. The magnitude of the effect of fiscal variables on business locations in a particular state will depend on the extent to which a state's fiscal variables are out of line with those in other states. Alternatively, actions to attract jobs by reducing taxes or altering expenditures would appear to have significant payoffs only in those states with very poor business climates. States with good business climates should look to other factors to attract more jobs. Nebraska's business climate. Overall, the business climate in Nebraska appears to be quite good. In several discussions with industry leaders in Nebraska, new companies cited moderate wage rates and high productivity per worker as reasons for their attraction to Nebraska. Nebraska is a right-to-work state, and some research finds that it contributes significantly to favorable employment growth. Energy costs remain very low because Nebraska is a public power state and the water supply is abundant. According to the McManus report, Nebraska has a sound unemployment insurance fund and a sensible workers' compensation program. That is, it is relatively difficult for non-disabled people to qualify for disability benefits compared to many other states. The soundness of these programs implies that employers will not face tax increases for these programs for some time. Moreover, the workers' attitude in Nebraska would seem to shun transfer payments unless they were absolutely necessary, and, thus, workers are unlikely to lobby for generous workers' compensation benefits. Nebraska also offers a fairly pleasant place to live. The cities of Nebraska have low crime rates, low housing prices, good theater and other arts, and horse racing. In addition, Nebraska offers a very good primary and secondary school system throughout the state. The SAT scores for Nebraska students rank fourth highest in the nation according to the McManus report. While many factors, such as a relatively homogeneous population and pre-selection of students disposed to take the SATs, might explain the high scores, the educational system is undoubtedly an important factor. There is also a very good healthcare system, with two dental and two medical schools in the state. In fact, in a recent edition of Places Rated, Omaha ranked as the 37th most desirable place to live of the 329 U.S. metropolitan areas that received ratings. Table 13.4 summarizes up-to-date information on wages, education levels, overall levels of state and local per capita total expenditure, expenditure on primary and secondary education, tax rates for personal, corporate, sales and property taxes, and industrial location incentive programs. Average hourly manufacturing wages in Nebraska for 1986 were $9.26. This wage is lower than the U.S. average of $9.56, and Nebraska's wage is lower than that in six of its eight neighboring states. Of the eight neighbors, only North Dakota, $8.18, and South Dakota, $7.72, had lower wage rates than Nebraska. In addition, according to 1980 figures, the latest information that is available, 73.4% of Nebraska's adult population completed high school compared to a U.S. average figure of 67.0%. Within its eight-state region, only Colorado, 78.6%, and Wyoming, 77.9%, have a larger percentage of their population graduating from high school. Thus, Nebraska, relative to neighboring states and the U.S. as a whole, has a moderate wage and an able labor force.